Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And it's time for...
Are you ready for the summer? Are you ready for the good times? Unspun.
Yeah.
Summer.
Let's so dive into the pool.
Womp, 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 womp.
I drove by yesterday. I was really sad. Empty. I was going, my mom is in Point Grey. Private hospital there, seniors spot, and she has a view of the pool. And I, my entire lifetime, I've never looked out in June and seen it empty. It's quite sad. It's quite sad.
It's cool, but don't worry, Ken Sim's going to save the day, right?
Well, that's what the mayor says.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna. He said, "What? I'm going to paraphrase because I don't know the exact words he used, but it was something to the effect of, I would like." For city staff and council to come forward with a plan to replace the pool because it's losing like 30,000 gallons an hour right now. Like it's, I don't even know how that happens, but that,
that's some caulking for that. A little bit of caulking, no?
Just a little. How about that duct tape that's on the infomercial?
Yeah.
Squeak and it stops. Yes. But then he also said that he wants an interim plan, like a stopgap that it can be used in the meantime before the new pool is rebuilt. So there's that plan. And then he wants it to be put on the table as something that can be offered up naming rights wise to like sell it like Rogers Arena or GM Place and what.
Right. Jody Vance Memorial Pool.
Oh, hey, I'm right here, George.
By the by the time government builds up another pool in the city, we'll both be long gone.
Right. 50 years from now.
50 years. A new kids' pool just opened up, but it's already under the water.
Oh, my God.
Here's my idea. First,
what's your idea?
Finish the pool and rebuild the West End pool that's been sitting on the drawing board for 20 years. The space is available. And hey, why not put a pool out of that parking lot that I keep talking about in Jericho? And it's sitting there at the very end. Nice giant pool on the water there.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. Like reimagine the whole thing.
Exactly. And then in the meantime, fix kids' pool. It's a pool. It's a hole. How hard could this possibly be? Give me a break. It's not an indoor pool. Just, I don't understand. This is just government BS. I mean, come on. How hard could this be?
Just not as hard as it seems. I think there's some complication with the fact that I remember a time back in the olden days when it was ocean fed, right? When you'd go swimming in kids' pool and it was actually the ocean of English Bay with a barrier, but it would come in through pipes and whatever. I remember as a kid being absolutely freaking terrified to swim around in it because it was like you'd open your eyes and it's brown,
you know.
But then it became this beautiful, clean, wonderful place and space and escape for so many people living in little teeny tiny boxes. I was one who was living in a teeny tiny little basement suite or living with four friends in a two bedroom at 1946 York, you know, for years. And that was the place. That was like my backyard, my playground, my place to go, my place to keep fit, my place in between, you know, waitressing gigs and driving cruiser for radio. I would go and I'd jump in, I'd swim a mile and I'd get out and I go, because it only cost me $1.35 or whatever it was, right? It wasn't a gym membership because there's no way I could afford that because my rent was so high in 1988. Right. Like, let's talk about rents here now.
Because we rented around the same time. 88 was I got my first apartment in the West End and my rent was either 425 or 495 for a 500 square foot, one bedroom on the 10th floor, 1234 Barclay Street. Beautiful view of the mountains,
good
the city, pool, indoor pool, 425, I think it was. And then I moved to around the corner, big jump to a beautiful old heritage building. And that was 600. Now that was 1990. So yeah, that's sorry, kids.
Even when I moved to the apartment that I gave up to move to Toronto in 2000, I'd secured the apartment in 1999. I was working at Vancouver Television. And I knew I was going to get the job in Toronto eventually and quickly actually, because I had finally found the apartment of my dreams.
Right.
And it was 1700 square feet.
Wow.
Two bedroom, two bathroom, massive kitchen. Like, and the living room, we could have had a pool table and two couches, and it was a solarium, and it was $1,700 a month. That same place is a $2.5 million condo now.
Yeah, exactly. How, I'm trying to think of the report that we get came out today. So I back then, because I was living with my now ex-wife, but we were our combined income was, we're income probably $2,000 a month. So it was representing about that was our gross. We were students, so I'm trying to think. So that would be, let's say it was $2,000. So that would be 20% of our income. Or combined income. If it was me on my own, I think I was making $1,200 a month at Big Steel Man.
Big Steel Man.
So that would have represented about 30% of my income. And that, but now this report came out that's saying the average is 57% in Vancouver.
Yeah. 27% of renters in Vancouver say that they're spending half their salary on rent.
Crazy.
How do you get ahead when you're spending? I mean, back then in 2000, because I was looking at, just before I moved to Toronto, I was looking at purchasing a place, like my first ever, like, ooh, how's this going to look? And the mortgage was going to be half my salary. And that was a deterrent for me. And now it's not even a choice. You have no choice.
No, I mean, in fact, my middle kid, Pierce, is moving back in with me. He and his girlfriend kind of broke up. They're back together, but they decided she's going back to school. So they were paying $2,000 a month for their basement suite and kits, and so they decided, look, we gotta save some money, and you know, they're whatever, and so he's moving back in, which I, hey, great, I love, I want my kids all to come home, but you know, it's crazy because he can't find a place as a single person, and he doesn't want a room with a bunch of dudes, so he's coming back home, and you know, it's got a, it's a definite downgrade. He's got a very small bedroom. You know, we live downtown, our bedrooms are the size of a bed. So yeah, it's just brutal. And I think, you know, here in how many 7 years of NDP, with promises, rental controls, you know, really strict rules. And yet Vancouver has the worst rents in Canada by a long shot. And, thank you very much, NDP, but don't worry, your purchase of, ICBC will solve, a building will solve all the problems.
Just before we make that pivot, I'd like to point out that during the BC Liberal government, now BC United, there was also really brutal rents to be had in their recent. So I don't think this, while we can make it political, the unspun part of this is nobody's figured this out. The rentals in Toronto are brutal. We're actually, everybody leaving here to go to Alberta is making it a problem in Alberta because it's supply and demand, right? So whoever's in power certainly has to wear it because they have to try and figure out a way. And I think that's a good way to get to, is this really the answer? Buying the ICBC headquarters building?
I think, and to say just on the political side, the reason I said that was because EB was blaming the Liberals who were been gone for 7 years.
It's ridiculous.
You can't
it's
keep
ridiculous.
Blaming a party that's not been around for 7 years. No. Come on, guys. No.
Everybody gets to wear it until it's solved.
Yeah.
And everybody, by the way, the whole somebody's in power, everybody's in government. We also, as taxpayers, pay the opposition. We also pay the party leaders who, like, we pay for everybody. So loving watching them all fight amongst themselves and get.
Can you just do your job?
Buzz done. Right. Oh, my God. Yeah. No, it makes me insanely upset when we're, you know, parsing apart stuff that doesn't land on a kitchen table to help out the people that are struggling the hardest. I mean, and further to that, like in the place we're talking about right now, the ICBC headquarters are in North Van, right?
Yep. Really big ugly building.
Really ugly building. Been there forever
and ever. On the waterfront. So ICBC underused because since COVID, half their employees working from home now. They have hot desks, all that kind of stuff. So they're moving to a smaller building. Smart, good move. Makes sense. Let's get them out of there. Let's get them into a smaller place to maybe save some money on the rent or whatever. That's fine. But the announcement saying we're going to turn this into social housing or affordable housing or whatever, you know, that old vague term. I find it this when, first of all, that's 100% politics. Likely the NDP may lose this election anyways and it'll go back to whatever. But I always find it challenging when a government, first of all, they buying it from ICBC, which is a crown corporation, for half of its value, which is curious. You know, why are you not paying market rate to ICBC? So you're basically giving, but it's still the same money going around and around. Anyways, that's all. I don't want, like, here's the whole, we talk a lot about this and whose job is what. So yes, the federal government needs to get more involved. We've always talked about this. We have to share this pain of housing across our country because it becomes less money per person if we share this pain of building more housing for people who need housing And especially social housing to get them into those kind of places. But to take a prime piece of property valued at $100 million, but rebuilt and torn down and put into, say, six, eight towers. In Vancouver, we had several projects that we say, okay, like the new project up at Oak Ridge, where you, okay, here, well, that wasn't city property, but there are examples where we had city properties saying, okay, the viaduct, the new, where they're tearing down the, if you're in Vancouver right now, you'll see that Granville Street Bridge, the loops coming off the bridge are being ripped apart. There are four sites there. And the goal by the city, when I was in office, that we voted for, it may have changed a little bit, but it was to, okay, we're gonna lease two properties for 99 years, but the developer has to build two social housing units equal to about 30% of social core needs, social housing. And so it's a win-win. You build, you get a developer to pay for the whole cost. The property's not worth anything really. It's land that the city owns. So great. It's a leasehold.
But the city had to pay to take the stuff down.
Yeah. Well, that was in the original. Nobody wanted that. That's right. That's a whole other thing. But here we have
that's
this
where
building.
Stuff goes sideways. Yeah. Yeah. On these deals. But it's happening. Right. It's
but
happening.
Here we have this exactly. We have this building in North Van now. Prime. If you've been to Lonsdale lately, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
And so this building is plopped right in the middle of this. Like it just needs to be torn down and rebuilt. But we're going to just turn it into social housing. It's probably going to be really badly designed. Really expensive to retrofit. Like, just tear the building down, put up 4 to 6 towers, work with the private sector, make them build the social housing, and just say the land is free for 100 years. But you can have the land, just build this social housing. Because guess what? It's no bottom line cost. You're just moving money around right now. Okay, ICBC gets a bit and the government gets a bit. And now we're going to spend millions and millions of dollars retrofitting an office building. It's nuts.
It's nuts. It's nuts, George Affleck. It's nuts. And you know what happens when you take away all the red tape and all the garbage and all the bureaucracy off of building? You get what's happening down at Senoc. Have you seen how quickly that's going up? At the Broad Street Bridge?
Yeah, it's the First Nations land.
It went, cut down the bramble bushes, put up a crane.
No parking.
Right, but
that sped up the process a lot.
All of it. Whatever it is that got moved aside for that to happen needs to be looked upon as some kind of beginnings of a model to move archaic permitting and just bureaucratic bullshit. Yeah. Right. They don't have to, but they're still attached to sewer. They're still attached to all the utilities are still there. They don't have the parking. They didn't have to go through this. They didn't have public consultation.
100% rental.
100% rental. Right. Mm-hmm. And people are screaming their heads off in wealthy areas of Kitts Point of how it's going to ruin the neighborhood. Never move. Then we need places for people to live. You know what? Renters and low cost rentals are who you and I grew up being. And frankly, aren't that far off of it right now. Like, we got into the housing position that we're in when it was quasi affordable. People need places to rent. And if I was right now in, not in my son's shoes, but in your son's shoes, Piers is a little bit older than Brady. Like, he's as much as you want your son to live back at home and it's fine, I'm the same. Come here. I'm fine. We have a room for you. It'd be great. I want my son to have the experience of finding the place that 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever it was, Bidwell, wherever Barclay. You were. Barclay, there you go. Or 1946 York. I'm proud of 2057 West 2nd, my 400 square foot studio apartment that had IKEA furniture that I pulled out of my parents' house. Like, that's a defining little, part of your life. And it's lost on, multiple generations in this town now. And that's the sad part. So when we're talking about social housing, when we're talking about rentals that are affordable, we're not talking about, oh, it's the ghetto, it's the whatever. It's like, and ghettoizing people isn't right either. Like, oh, I'm so frustrated by it.
Your three-story walk-up that you lived in Kitts when you were there, even then it was kind of like, man, not the greatest places to live.
Totally.
But they were built fast in the 60s, really fast, through federal funding that was used by the private sector as a tax write-off to build those three stories. I grew up in Langley. There was hundreds and hundreds of these places that were built. And they're still there. I drove by the places that were built in the 60s. They're still there.
Balfour Properties, baby. Balfour Properties. Yeah.
So
they're the same group of landowners, the same buildings that have got the, like, and you know what? People line up to live in them because they are a footprint that isn't little teeny tiny boxes, like you said, room for more than a bed. But yep, the kitchen's the size of what is typically a kitchen table, because you can just like turn around in it, right, and you open the fridge door. No, only one person in the kitchen at a time. And same in the bathroom. It's just like, mm-hmm, get in, step aside, close the door, turn around, use the toilet, get up, open the door, go around. Yep.
Like Sweden, it's not... I lived in one of those in Sweden. Yeah. But I've talked about this before when we moved there for a year in 96, 97. But it was a sublet of a sublet because they have strict rent control. So they build these places, right, these micro units,
right,
but they didn't have rent control. So nobody ever gives them up. And so we were subletting from a sublet of a, I don't know how many. So we were paying market, wow, rate, and right, they were not. And so they were making a nice little profit through a social housing or a subsidized, right, housing that we weren't benefiting from. And that's
cue the Airbnbs, by the way. People who are taking their Airbnb or taking their rental and turning it into an Airbnb.
Demand, solve that problem. The dirty words of supply and demand, people hate talking about that when it comes to housing, but that's 100%. It's all supplies of all levels of housing, whether you're rich or poor, just build more.
That's right. And I love seeing cranes in Vancouver. We've seen them all around Metro. I mean, how much have we seen built in Burnaby? How much have we seen in North Van, like you say, all, mm-hmm, along Marine Drive in North Vancouver? It's all density, 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 up all the way to Lynn Valley and all the way up. That's, mm-hmm, why there's so much traffic to and from the North Shore. You can't get in and out because there's no transit. So that's another topic. But Burnaby, thinking of the River District down at the, mm-hmm, foot, is still in Burnaby. And then you jump over the... New Westminster is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you went to New Westminster? If you haven't been there in a while, it's wildly grown up.
Yep.
You know, Surrey's the same. I went out to an event out there at the Surrey Event Center with the BC Care Providers. And I had not been in that compound that has like the university and the da-da-da. Like, it is grown up nice. I'm sitting in Vancouver, so we are so far behind in the city of Vancouver. But you mentioned Oak Ridge, that's one. Mm-hmm. I have 5-6 cranes within spitting distance in, right, my neighborhood, and
Broadway.
I couldn't be more thrilled. It's about damn time, because this place has been emptied out by people who bought places and don't live in them, or bought places and whatever, are holding them because they're, for whatever reason, like, we just have lost the families and the people and the groups and the workers, like, living here and working here. It's a lost art, and we need it back.
It's harder to you know, when you've got houses, to tear them down and build up a bunch of density. But there is, as you've noted, lots of places for density that have, you know, I look at the whole east side, southeast Vancouver, there's lots of room for a lot of construction. Don't tell me there's no places in Vancouver left to build, or come on.
No, people have been holding, watching, because two of those cranes are on spots that used to be gas stations that have been sitting with community gardens on them for...
What is the deal with that? Why is that
25 years?
Why so long? Why don't, what,
because
is it?
If you put a community garden on it, you don't have to pay the property tax on it.
So they're sitting on these. Yeah, that's a provincial regulation, by the way. I know that,
which,
but I think they always argue that it's so toxic or something. I'm like, well, then no, be remediating it.
Right.
Toxic.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
How about we fix that? Yeah, right. That was the old line that we got. Oh, that Shell station, we need you. But in other jurisdictions, they don't need 15 to 20 years to sit idle.
No,
first.
And why are you letting people put gardens on top of something that's toxic?
Good point, George Affleck. Good point. Hey, can we talk a little politics here? Gosh, we've been going on here. We're 20 minutes in. How about this Navigator poll that you sent me, and I read it, and there's a bunch of things I want to talk to you about, but I think the things, I kind of feel a little bit bad for Kevin Falcon right now, I have to say. Mm-hmm. Rightly or wrongly, I feel for him because he has to feel deflated, if not completely defeated, when a poll comes back with 54% of people who said that they would not vote for BC United said the reason they won't vote is because they don't like him. It's not,
that,
they don't like, yeah, right? I was just like, you know, this is when politics. Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, I was hated in politics, but I was also kind of liked. So the hate was based on my where I landed on the political spectrum. It wasn't me personally. I get the sense that this is a personal lack of, you know, and that hurts. That when people don't, and you kind of, what am I doing wrong? I'm like, why did everybody hate me? You know, he's lost his momentum with the party. He's, you know, it's brutal. And you know, there's still, as we talk about this, there's, you know, there's elections and then there's, you know, whatever. Who knows what could happen? But the bleeding happened again. He lost another candidate to the Conservatives up in the Sunshine Coast. You know, I just think, oh God, it was like, and but combined, what was interesting about that poll, combined, the Conservatives and BC United don't make up enough to on the overall numbers to beat the BC NDP, which is the first time I've seen that in a while.
I found that really interesting as well, because in where did you go? Here you are. When I opened it up and it had the diagrams, right track, wrong direction.
Right.
So with the BC NDP, 85% polled said that the BC NDP were on the right track, and only 15% they were headed in the wrong direction. For the BC Conservatives, 87% said they were headed in the wrong direction and 13% on the right track. And then BC United was 68% said headed in the wrong direction and 32% said on the right track. Those are astonishing numbers to me.
Yeah, and EB came out ahead on the popularity of the leaders, number one.
Yep, big time.
So, I mean, obviously this poll is one poll, and we talk about that.
Yeah.
And
you know,
these
polls
add up into whatever. But it's got to be good news for the NDP. And I think, you know, it's really challenging that you have these two parties that you know, combined would potentially win an election, but have leaders that nobody likes. It's very bizarre because Green Party came in second for most likable. So,
which is wild there, in and of itself.
But then her polling is like at 6% for, as you know, the worst that it's ever been. So great, good leadership, but nobody trusts you as a party. So it's just showing, it's almost like what's happening in the States. It's like 50-50 right now. We just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I think that split definitely helps the NDP. But as we get closer and closer and we're seeing ridings lose their star candidate over to one or over to the Conservatives, and then will the BC United run a candidate in that, and there's enough time to find somebody of any kind of, you know, gravitas that can beat that person. So no,
and what's that,
not.
What's the rumor out in Surrey? Like, you'd sent me something else that there's like somebody
Linda Heppner,
because it was a former mayor but not Doug McCallum.
Yeah, so Surrey mayor, but that seems like a bit of a long shot. But it is an interesting question about who's going to start going, you know, maybe the Conservatives aren't so bad and I should jump on board with them. You know, Yale Town's one riding that, you know, that could go Conservative if BC United don't run a strong candidate. It shouldn't go NDP. It's a new riding, fairly Conservative riding. There are a few ridings out there that should go to the United or Conservatives, but whoever the star candidate might be would be the winner. And I think that's what's going to happen if we talked about this a couple of weeks ago where the divvying up's happening organically anyways, that didn't happen strategically. And so as you get these strong candidates like Lauren Dirksen up in Williams Lake, you've got, you know, a super, you know, really strong candidate that's one already up there, well known in the community, former publisher of the paper. You know, the likelihood of him losing now and to somebody that BC United brings in is very unlikely. And so they're good so that's a Conservative. That's right next to John Rust.
Right.
So the North is like going, you know, and then
unsurprisingly.
Yeah. So
unsurprisingly, like traditionally unsurprisingly, right?
It's like very Conservative.
Right. But you have to win in Metro Vancouver to be the premier.
And specifically Surrey. Yeah.
So resolving the SPS RCMP situation, it seems to have deflated as of last week, right?
It's definitely good news for the NDP that they don't have to keep talking about this anymore.
Well, that's what I mean. Exactly. Yeah. The spin was, how do we shut this up? And then just pivot away from that. And they very much, you know, David Eby is out talking to people. We actually had him because tonight's the season two finale of Steel and Vance. And we had weeks and weeks ago talked to David Eby about coming on because he was with us before and we ran out of time and there were a million things we want to talk about. I'm like, you should come back for our finale show. And he's like, oh, my wife doesn't have the baby then. Sure. So then in the process of confirming that all, and I got a note saying, oh, we're in your studios right now on Monday. I'm like, well, what are you doing there? Oh, he's on Mo Amir's show for the whole show. I'm like, well, Mo's show's on right after our show. We're not going to have him on our show and then on Mo. Like,
no.
He's very available is my point. Mm-hmm. And when you're very available, you're happy to talk about the things you might be asked about versus, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of Kevin Falcon at the moment.
He's probably available, but nobody wants to talk to him. I don't know.
Well, there you go. Or just, you know, because a lot of the conversation will be about, wow, your numbers are really awkward. Super bad. It's super awkward. Yeah. I didn't mention this to you before, but did you follow along with the Brad West going to the canal thing and Amsterdam trip with a couple of other mayors that.
The metro thing and that whole thing is part
yeah,
of
that metro thing. Yeah. Sorry.
And then Dylan Kruger and all that stuff. But there's some weird communication breakdown happening in Metro. Okay, let me just say my rant, as I like to do, about Metro Vancouver.
Let's go.
The most expensive government next to the provincial government, the highest funded government operation in the province, and the most opaque. This is an unelected board. They're delegated by each city gets to get a certain number. They send whoever they want. When I was in office, I was never that person. It was always civilian. So they send an overly weighted representation to Metro that wasn't representing the council as a whole. They should have had one person from the opposition to represent the city, but no, they never did that. So you automatically in that situation had a Metro board dominated by Vancouver and Surrey, by the way, this board, because of the size, it's based on the size of the cities.
Right.
So,
but
on occasion I got to go, but 90% as a fill in, 90% of the stuff that happens there, it happens in camera, which means secretly. This is not cool. Unelected secret meetings, spending billions and billions of dollars.
No.
Clearly, as we've learned badly, they're $3 billion over on one of their line items.
Now being audited independently without telling the board that it's going to be audited independently after the board said it won't be audited.
Exactly. It should be audited. Everything should be audited there.
I know. But doesn't that feel like just a little dysfunctional? Isn't
that
place a little
needs
bit
blowing
like
up? That place needs blowing up. I mean, I don't mean literally, by the way. I mean, government wise.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
to qualify your
yes,
want to.
Exactly. I don't want to.
Nobody gets hurt in the blowing up of George Affleck.
And Peter Ladner, former mayoral candidate, former city councilor, had a strategy for this about a kind of an elected version. I should dig up some of that and I can tell you about it. But there is ways to make it, because I'm not a big fan of adding more elected bodies, but there's a better way to administer the metro budgets and build the billions of dollars, because clearly they're doing a really terrible job at it. And you learn about mayors who are going on junkets at the expense of taxpayers and not, you know, what is that all about? Like, stop. You're not learning anything going to these places. Give me a break. Like, you're a politician. You're not learning anything. Come on. That's staff's job. They can report. Send staff to Amsterdam, learn some stuff, come back, tell me what you learned, and tell me how that fits into planning for whatever. That's how it works. And then I'll vote for it or not vote for it. That's what government is.
I would argue that we have learned over these last 4 years and 5 months that much can be achieved in a Zoom meeting.
Yes.
There is no requirement to go there to understand it. And in fact, you'd likely see it more clearly when explained to you with a presentation that you can then go back and refer to for many months and years ahead while informing other people.
Yes.
I often, you know, I appreciate much of what Brad West does and the way he does it. This one surprised me. It surprised me because he's usually so fiscally aware.
Mm-hmm.
But this being a metro thing and
there's no need to go to Amsterdam.
I don't
metro.
Think so. I don't. You know, I don't know enough about it. You certainly know much more about it. And the way you explain it makes me feel like if there's going to be a metro, why do we have all the other municipals? Like, I feel there's duplication. There's cost savings to be made.
You know who can make that decision? The province. Yeah. Municipalities work at the pleasure of the provincial government. So Doug Ford did in Toronto, where he said, yeah, this council is way too big. I'm going to cut it down by 90%.
Yeah. And everybody was the sky was falling. Sky was falling.
Oh my God.
And nothing really changed.
Guess what? You don't need more politicians to have good government. What a shocker. What a shocker.
Wild.
So
okay,
I definitely think there could be a regionalization of an amalgamation is something worth talking about.
And while we're at it, why don't we do it with policing as well? Because I'm really tired of hearing about how this RCMP detachment doesn't talk to that police, municipal police force, and had no idea that that guy was doing that over there before this over there. And now they've been.
And you said this a while ago too. I mean, as far as, and I always wondered why maybe that they didn't listen to you, like they would, and just go, okay, we're having so much trouble with this Surrey thing. Let's just create a called the Metro Police, and we're gonna move it into a whole bunch of markets, and make it available to any city who wants to be the new whatever Vancouver Metro Police, and it's gonna be based in Surrey. We're gonna fight. They're gonna win that. And now, anybody else want to jump on board with this? Hey, Port Moody, who has its own police force, do you want to have this one? You want to amalgamate? Do you want to just
come with us?
Yeah,
we'll Vancouver. Share all of our intelligence, our resources, our enforcement if you need it. If there's something happening in your neck of the woods,
criminals don't know city boundaries. I just
weird.
Can't believe it.
Weird. they do know social media, and you can find this one at George
underscore
Affleck. George underscore Affleck. I am at Jody Vance. Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance. Unspun Podcast. We have to talk about when we're going on hiatus this summer.
Soon.
Yeah.
I'm so busy with work. And I think, you know, we need a break. So
yeah, we do.
I would say next week might be our last for the summer. Maybe.
Let's go Canada Day. Do we do Canada Day to Labor Day?
Sounds good to me. Because we want to come back for September for the provincial election. So
God, we have to. And we got a bunch of stuff happening in September that we're going to have to talk about.
Yes.
So yeah, yes. But we'll still talk all the time, George. And if we have to do something special because something big happens, we'll throw it out here. So like and subscribe and follow along. That's Unspun Podcast. See ya.
Bye.